Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for another great episode. My guest today is Fumi Saito, and we are going to talk about Dick the Bruiser's appearances in Japan. It's a great conversation and a great dive into Japanese wrestling history. Fumi is the preeminent expert, journalist, and author about Japanese wrestling, and that interview and chat is coming up right after this, so stick around.
Hey, you bums, we have to take a quick break.
Phil Singer Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilSingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is PhilSingerGames, PhilSingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
All right, and welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by the most prolific Japanese wrestling journalist of all time, and we're going to talk some about Dick the Bruiser in Japan, Fumi Saito. Fumi, how are you?
Hello from Tokyo!
Yeah, I'm recording on a Sunday evening my end, a Monday morning your end. Woo!
Yeah.
Gotta love it.
Thanks to the technology.
Yeah.
We talked about that. Yeah, because some people don't believe me. I'm talking from Tokyo, Japan.
Yeah, it's a podcast that covers 2 days.
Yeah, but the Dick the Bruiser, yes. So is this the subject on Dick the Bruiser, but are you fascinated by the person Dick the Bruiser?
I am, yeah. I'm originally from Indiana. Grew up watching.
Ah, that's why.
Yeah, watching Dick the Bruiser and everything else. And there in Indiana, everybody has a Dick the Bruiser story. You know, everybody knows
course,
Dick the Bruiser.
Of course.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
But before we dive into that,
Detroit the Sheik.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Everybody, Minnesota.
Yep.
Jackie Harper, Tennessee. Oh, Lawler.
Yes. But before we dive into that, let's let everybody know a little bit about Fumi, because people may not be familiar with you. You, over 40 years ago, you came to the U.S., to Minnesota, right? And you finished school there. How did that come about?
Oh, I was a... When I was 17, I was an exchange student.
Okay.
And this scholarship Rotary Club thing, you know, they, you know, sent me to, you're going to Minnesota. I said, okay, I'm going to Minnesota. And I told my high school homeroom teacher that I'm going AWA.
Did he know what that was?
We're going, what? I am going AWA. All right. And so they sent me to Minnesota. And I stayed in Robbinsdale, Minnesota.
And famous finished, Robbinsdale, Minnesota.
Of course. Of course. Of all places, you know. And it was like, you have to think it was a destiny, huh?
Yeah. So you finished at Robbinsdale High School?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, where Rick Rude, all those Robbinsdale, guys.
Cooper.
Yeah.
Yeah, Thompson. Actually, I went to high school with Wayne Bloom.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wayne Bloom. Destruction Crew, Beverly Brothers. Yeah. Yeah. I like Wayne.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, then met all of them, Road Warriors, everybody. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody went through there.
After that, they sent me to 12th grade, right? Mm-hmm. Then while I was in 12th grade in Cooper Robbinsdale High School, I took SAT with other American students. Then at the end, towards the end of the year, you start going, you know, college, you know, to visit.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
University of Minnesota, this, that. And then I said, I can go to college here. And so I went to Augsburg Lutheran College and stayed in Minnesota another 5 years.
Yeah.
Then when I was 19, I sent a letter to the editor of Wrestling Magazine in Japan. And I wrote what I can do. You know, like I can take photos in ringside. I can write story. I can do this and that. And they didn't think I could do any of that, right? Okay, let's do it. Look, that sounds great. Please do, right? Not expecting me to actually go into AWA show and going to ringside and take, you know, photos and, you know, spoke with Wally Carbo, the Vern Gagne, they let me into ringside and I start going, you know, a lot of shows and, you know, sending stories, you know, to Japanese magazines when I was 19. That was back in 1981.
Yeah, and that's how it all started, right? I mean, you've been prominent journalist since. So while you were here, you were living in Minnesota. Did you get to travel out and go to any other territories or visit anywhere else?
Tennessee, Dallas, Florida, Montreal, New York. Not every single territory there were, you know, like Gulf Coast or, you know, San Antonio or anything like this. But I've been to many. Yeah.
Yeah. So did you get to meet? I mean, there was a lot of guys like you out there, right? Each territory had their photographer. Then,
Of course,
And I mean, you know, I mean, of course, that's how, you know, a lot of guys, Cornette, all these guys got their start. WWA had their guys, David McClain, Scott Romer, that took pictures and did writing and ended up doing things.
I met Scott Romer, of course. Yeah,
Scott Romer's a good guy. Yeah.
Indianapolis, you're from. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. I'm assuming when
he came up to Minnesota a few times too while I was there.
Yeah. Yeah. And he has sent pictures over to Gong and stuff like that in Japan too, from different things, you know, more recent times. But I'm assuming like when you're going to these other places, that's kind of the guys you're first connecting with, right? So those guys doing the same thing as you probably.
Probably. But I was not, you know, like I was always the youngest in that room.
Yeah, so
no, I'm not. I'm the oldest guy in the room now.
So what was it like? You're not only are you adjusting as a Japanese student in America, but I mean, now here you are. I mean, were you familiar with this American style wrestling much? I mean, were you seeing some tapes?
I had been watching wrestling ever since I was 3 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you were, so that was your first thought then when you heard you were coming to Minnesota was,
I had to tell everybody that I'm going to AWA of all things. Yeah, and then before I graduated from college, you know, Masa Saito moved to Minnesota.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we became friends. In 1984, Jumbo Tsuruta came to Minnesota as AWA champion and toured. And that was interesting.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, while I was in Minnesota, this 1984, that WWF national expansion happened. So AWA in St. Louis, St. Paul Civic Center, and WWF started running, you know, Minneapolis Met Center, and I started going both shows, you know?
Yeah.
And while the Hulk Hogan was AWA star, then he came back with WWF champion, and this is that was the beginning of the end for AWA, of course. Yeah. But I was able to witness all that.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because if you came in 81 and stayed, you know, in there 5 or 6 years, you were there for the true start of Hulkamania there in Minneapolis.
Yeah. And also, that was the time that, before we forget, Hulk Hogan spent half the year in New Japan and half the year split AWA, going back and forth, back and forth. So that's why I was able to meet him.
Yeah.
And we sat down in hotel room and chatted, you know?
Yeah.
And, he was really friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah, really friendly for a big star. Yeah. And I learned a lot about it, that the bigger star you are, the nicer you actually are in person.
Yeah? That's what you found out?
Mm-hmm.
That's odd. I wonder why.
Yeah, the Road Warriors, Bruiser Brody, and also the mentor to me, Mr. Nick Bockwinkel.
Oh, yeah. I love Nick Bockwinkel. Yeah, he's, of course, you know, always usually paired with a Indianapolis boy, Bobby Heenan. And Bobby got his start in Indianapolis there for Bruiser. But I don't know that there was ever a better pairing of a manager and wrestler than Bobby Heenan and Nick Bockwinkel. They just they just worked together so well. And it's odd because Nick didn't need someone to talk for him. But it
as an interview, but that he didn't wrestle. He didn't work like heel in the ring.
Yeah.
Everything was so subtle, like Luthes, the Buddy Rogers style, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's just a good wrestler. And also, when you were a kid, looking back, Bockwinkel during the match sold so much, right? Always get shit beat out of him. So something. Because 75% of the content of the match, Bockwinkel was selling, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So as a kid, it's like your challenger will almost beat him, always.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like it was my growing period that what really, you know, what does this world heavyweight champion do? You know, that at the end of the night, he get the belt in the back and go home. You know what I'm saying? And Bobby Heenan compliments that. You know?
Yeah. And it's an interesting point. Without Bobby Heenan, Nick Bockwinkel was...
Can be babyface.
Was a babyface almost,
Like your Wilbur Snyder.
Yeah. And I never really thought about that aspect that...
Because he works like that in Japan.
That's true. Yeah.
Heel babyface thing in Japan is always very subtle. In old days, like Ricky Dozan era, Japanese wrestler, you know, natural babyface against American that are automatic heel.
Yep.
You know, like very ancient, not ancient, but that's how they started.
Sure, yeah.
But the Funks, the Billy Robinson, the Mill Maskers, they won't be heels in Japan. So there are international superstars that are babyface in Japan, too.
Yeah.
Whereas you always have Abdullah the Butcher, Tiger Jeet Singh. I mean, 100% heels.
Yeah.
But even Abby, Abdullah the Butcher, later year, he got old. And people start looking at him like almost like, I grew up watching this guy, and it had to be babyface. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, well, Abby, what, recorded a single in Japan?
So, because, you know, one chance, Japanese wrestling always had, you know, two major leagues, you know?
Yeah.
Giant Baba's Old Japan Pro Wrestling, Antonio Inoki's New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah.
Both on the network channel, prime time, you know? Yep. So you watch both league. Like a league, you know, like a national league and American league.
Yeah,
one had Abdullah the Butcher, Inoki had Tiger Jeet Singh all year long. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then they have, you know, like All Japan had other superstars from America, but the, you know, Inoki in New Japan always had Andre the Giant.
Yeah, yeah.
Then Stan Hansen, Hulk Hogan, you know, and WWF superstars.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah. Well, let's switch to Dick the Bruiser.
Dick the Bruiser is very actually more important figure than you kind of noticed, you know, in Japan. He had total of seven tours to Japan. Seven tours between 1965 and 1980, actually.
Yeah.
His final tour was in 1980. He would have been 50, right? Is his birth date 1929? Is that accurate?
I think it's a few years. It was in the 30s. He died in 91. And he 90. Was 90. Correct, 90. You're correct.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. My bad. And man, what year was he
Was
born? Let
he,
me.
yes, some of the record of older wrestlers, the birth year is sometimes like,
Yeah, you're correct. 1929, yeah.
right. So he would have been either, is his birthday June?
Yeah, June,
So yeah, right before his 51st birthday, 50-year-old Dick the Bruiser made his final tour to IWE,
Well,
International.
just keep in mind, in 1980, if that was your life, we were still seeing him another 10 years or so in Indiana.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah,
Yeah.
but he wouldn't be a traveling international superstar any longer. And also,
No.
much like the Sheik, the Bruiser, they were promoters, right?
Yeah.
So he couldn't have 6 week tour.
No.
He always had like 1 week to 10 day tour, and that's it. So it
Yeah.
was always like a special appearance.
Yeah.
And half the time, see, I just said that he had made seven tours to Japan total.
Yeah.
Three or four of them were with the Crusher.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because
Yeah.
famous, real famous tag team, Bruiser and Crusher. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So, but the Dick Bruiser did have solo tours too.
Yeah, and you mentioned 1965. That's what I saw. I was going to ask because that's the earliest I saw him there. And I'm assuming that he got started with Ricky Dozan, right? Meeting him.
This one, the Ricky Dozan, died 1963.
Okay. Well, I knew Bruiser always worked Los Angeles up to when he started promoting. So I
Yeah,
figure
he
he made a lot
would
of contacts
have.
that way.
I mean, you're talking about Jerry Strombo, WWA, right?
Yes, right,
Yeah.
correct. Yeah.
In Ricky Dozan's days, America meant that territory. You know
Yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. All the stars from America come in to Ricky Dozan's JWA, Nippon Pro Wrestling.
Yep.
But it's actually through LA office or Hawaii, El
Yeah.
Karasik. That's it.
Yeah.
Ricky Dozan will had some lot of star coming, but he didn't really have affiliate all the way to like St. Louis, Minnesota,
Correct.
Detroit, let alone New York. Back then, America almost meant just Hawaii and LA.
Yeah.
But that's
Well,
why that the WWE superstar came, the Freddie Blassie, the Fire Destroyer, the
yeah.
Bob Ellis, the you know what I'm saying? So I
Yeah.
think Dick the Bruiser almost came though, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Well, right. Ricky Dozan would come and he would come work LA and whatever. But for him as a promoter, it's almost like he's scouting talent, right? He was looking
Yeah,
for
but
guys to bring in.
he had an agent in LA, Dick of that the Great Togo.
Yeah, correct, right. And I mean, he was using a lot of those guys, like the Shire Brothers and all those guys that were big in L.A. Were coming over.
Yeah, started with Markovich, that Sharp Brothers from San Francisco. So
Yeah, Sharp
all
Brothers, correct. Yes.
West Coast,
Yeah.
either how these wrestlers back then, all the airplane, flight always stopped in Hawaii,
Yes.
then California.
Yep.
So those guys worked California, then worked in Hawaii, and worked in
Yeah.
Japan. And
Yeah,
on their way back home, worked in Hawaii for a week or two, then went back to California. Yeah.
the secret to the Maivia success there in Hawaii, a lot of it was because they were able to use those guys coming back from LA to Japan and get a lot of those stars on those tours.
Yeah, that the LA traditions, lasted until Inoki's days, well into 80s,
Yeah, and early on, you said he was doing some solo stuff, right? I saw that Bruiser was challenging Giant Baba for the international title and different things early on.
Actually, he was what was interesting was though, you're talking about 1965 November tour, right?
Yes, correct.
That's his Dick the Bruiser's very first tour, very
Yes.
first appearance.
Yes.
He wasn't challenging international title. It was the vacant. See,
Okay.
Ricky Dozan had this international title,
Yeah.
lineage from Luthes,
Yes.
international heavyweight title, and he passed, with that belt, and the title was vacant for 1 year, 1964, and Giant Baba came back as a big huge star in Japan, and they revived the title, international heavyweight title, with new, design belt, American superstar, representing from the country, and Giant Baba. So Dick the Bruiser against Giant Baba up for grab for the international title. Interesting, huh?
So, I mean,
Yeah.
was Bruiser an instant hit in Japan? I mean, I imagine his style probably.
Dick the Bruiser was somebody you read in magazine.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Finally, Dick the Bruiser comes to Japan, kind of thing.
Yeah, because, I mean, Bruiser worked all over the U.S. Worked, I mean, even when he promoted, he would still, you know, occasionally do stuff. So he was, like you said, was known. Did you encounter him there when you were in Minneapolis at all? Because he was still doing a few shows here and there.
He came in Chicago for like an annual battle royal or something.
Yeah.
But not as much, no.
Yeah, I don't think Bruiser's not as open to, was never seemed to be as open for interviews and things.
I finally saw him in the ring in person. But it wasn't a crew cut Dick the Bruiser. He was a curly hair Dick the Bruiser.
The perm Dick the Bruiser.
Yeah. And so, also I think Crusher would be, well, Crusher is like Minneapolis, you know, like AJ.
Oh yeah.
Like real Homer. So he bring in his so-called cousin to be partner. So Dick the Bruiser was never really regular in AWA.
Yeah.
Although he went to St. Louis a lot, right?
Sure. Yeah, he did. Which is peculiar. He didn't, you know, Bruiser doesn't seem like the St. Louis kind.
Also never an NWA member.
Nope.
Yeah.
But he still had those connections. I mean, it was.
But then he much later years, he was still Missouri Heavyweight Champion. And stuff
he
like
was.
That.
Yeah. I mean, he had name value. So, you know, sometimes that's, I guess that trumps other things sometimes. And and that closeness he had with, you know, those guys in that area and the different promotions. I mean, but you did mention that, right? The majority of his tours were with Crusher teaming.
Yeah. And, the very first tour we just talked about, the 1965 International Heavyweight title up for grab, Giant Baba against Dick the Bruiser, two single match.
Yeah.
What's interesting though, back then, Baba beat everybody, right? You know, in 1960s, two out of three fall. You know, but this, you know, this, and let alone title match, right?
Right.
But both falls were DQ'd by him, by Dick the Bruiser. So he, even in Japan, Dick the Bruiser didn't do job.
Well, you know, I guess he's consistent.
We are old enough and adult enough to just, you know, what would be politically correct. And he came in for the first tour, 1965, superstar for the first time. And two out of three fall, International Heavyweight title match, both falls. DQ by Dick the Bruiser, DQ by Dick the Bruiser. And then two title match, he went home. Unbeaten, basically. Interesting, huh?
Yeah, he...
It's 36-year-old Dick the Bruiser.
That would continue on all the way. They're not doing job. That's how, in 82, Bruiser worked with Jerry Jarrett. They worked together to try to help Bruiser, right, kind of revitalize. It didn't last long because in Fort Wayne, Bruiser was putting himself in the main event against Kamala, who was the young, hot heel.
What year is that?
1982.
Oh, wow. Almost like homemade compilation Dick the Bruiser DVD, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe it was CD-ROM then, you know, like 2000 sometime. You know, I watched the whole thing from black and white Dick the Bruiser all the way to like last days of Indianapolis WWE, you know?
Yep. Well, but he, you know, again, was supposed to be following Jarrett's lead, but he put himself in the main event with Kamala, who was their unbeatable monster heel at that time. And Dick the Bruiser.
Yeah. And Dick the Bruiser, much younger.
And Dick the Bruiser beat him, right?
What was his finish then? Like, or even his prime time? Was he like atomic bombs away?
Yeah.
Like coming off the top rope, but basically just a stump.
Yeah, I don't think he would do that in 82, but.
Okay. So that was his finish, always.
Yeah. It's just
atomic
bombs
away. See, does atomic bombs away sound okay in Japan?
Not really. Is that
you know what
they
saying?
Is that what they were calling it in Japan too?
Yeah. Ooh. But it wasn't translated. Atomic bombs away in Japanese accent. Like was never translated, like a foreign word became the name of the wrestling move. Atomic bombs away. Atomic bombs away. And I as a kid, I don't know what that was, and he's coming off the top rope, but actually ended up stomping that person, right?
Yeah.
Not that much of a move, you know?
Well, no, I mean,
Ray Stevens did that, and a couple other people did that, and yeah. And
well,
who was on the tour with Dick DeBruce was always interesting because he goes, you know, with the time.
Yeah.
The first tour he was in, he was with the wrestler called Johnny Costas,
mm-hmm.
and the original Assassins one, and A, we call it A and B, not the 1-2, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
This Assassin's going to be Mizuri Mora and Jody Hamilton, you know, yep. version, right? And Mr. Moto and Albert Torres, you know, it's like, wow, that sounds like 60s crew, right? And on his second tour, 1963, I mean, 1968, 3 years later, you know,
yeah,
that was the time that Dick DeBruce had a single title match against Giant Baba again.
Mm-hmm.
That time, 2 out of 3 fall, 2 against 1, and Baba actually pinned him. So they must have saved it, you know?
Yeah.
And that was like, you know, Dick DeBruce coming in for one, you know, final week of the tour. Rest of the tour, they had people like Buddy Austin and like Baron Skrna, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Baron Michaels. And the real young Harley Race.
Yeah.
Real young, like, you know, 19-20-year-old Dick Murdock.
So, so when Bruiser was coming from his early tour, he wasn't doing the whole tour.
Never he did. Never
just
did.
Coming in for kind of the last, the
final
the finale.
1 week of the tour, yeah, to do the title match. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Always did. So that was his second tour. And third tour the following year, 1969, was a very interesting one because he brought Crusher Rosalski for the first time
mm-hmm.
and beat the tag team of Giant Baba and Antonio Inoki together because they were still together.
Yeah.
Giant Baba and Antonio Inoki, two top guys, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Antonio Inoki at the time was clearly number two.
Yeah.
Still, you know.
Yeah.
And Giant Baba, international champion, singles champion, and Baba and Inoki together, international tag team champion.
Yeah.
Okay. And Bruiser and Crusher, you know, came in, and then beat Baba Inoki for the title. Oh, at the beginning of like a first day.
Yeah.
Then the last day, they dropped the belt back like 6 days later.
Yeah.
But they don't do that too often, you know.
Yeah.
The only, yeah, the guys that, you know, that the Baba and Inoki combination put over was Dick the Bruiser and the Crusher combination and Wilbur Snyder, Danny Hodge combination. That's strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then all the way to 1971, the Funks, Dorian mm-hmm. Terry beat him.
Yeah.
And that was the last time Baba and Inoki ever tagged together.
Yeah. So that was the Crusher and Bruiser's first tour. Together, right?
Together, yes. 1969.
Yeah, and they had the little run as international tag champs, and
about 6 days. Yes,
6 days. Yeah. So from there on out, were all the tours that Bruiser did, were they with Crusher from there on?
Actually, 1972. Yes, with Crusher. 1972. Yeah. They both toured IWE. It's the second wrestling company. IWE. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
International Wrestling Enterprise, the company mm-hmm. that existed between 1966 and 1981, only a 15-year period. But the IWE is very interesting because they had a partnership with AWA, and that IWE was very responsible of discovering young Monster Rushmoff before he was under mm-hmm. the Giant.
Yep.
IWE was a company that introduced Billy Robinson to Japan to work Japanese side, you know. And mm-hmm. also, they were responsible of like convincing Carl Gotch to come out of retirement from in Hawaii.
Yeah,
and IWE was the first wrestling Japanese company that did the cage match.
Oh yeah,
other things.
So who ran the IWE? Who was the
Isao Yoshiwara? Isao Yoshiwara. Yeah,
yeah.
Isao Yoshiwara was the wrestler, the very first college graduate professional wrestler in Ricky Dozan era.
Mm-hmm.
And when Ricky Dozan died, four guys took over the company: Yoshino Sato, Michiaki Yoshimura, Kokichi Endo, and Toyonobori. First, Toyonobori got kicked out. So three guys: Endo and Yoshino Sato and Yoshimura, right?
Uh-huh.
And they were like judo and sumo guys.
Yeah.
And Yoshiwara broke off from JWA and formed the second company, IWE, with Hiro Matsuda.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah, and then got the network channel, TBS Channel 6,
uh-huh.
and they were competing pretty well. And kind of useless trivia, but the IWE Japanese stars always had English subtitle, like Strong Kobayashi.
Yeah.
Great Satsu, Russia Kimura, Animal Hamaguchi, the Mighty Inoue, so on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, I get you.
So that was very modern, very modern.
Yeah.
So, but think about 1972. The Crush is a couple years older, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Dick the Brother must be like 42 years old then.
Yeah.
You know? But they came in as Bruiser and Crusher. And see, I wish we, you know, were able to see Dick the Bruiser in more of his prime time.
Yeah,
I wanted
right.
to see what he really did. Like, I read about 1957 Madison Square Garden riot.
Yep, yep. You
know, he and Dr. Jerry Graham against Antonino Rocca and Edouard Carpentier, and they must be all superstars then, right?
Yep.
And actually banned from New York City and all these things, and much
yep.
younger, and
yep.
coming off NFL.
Yeah.
That's his prime.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely.
When he started coming to Japan, he always kind of got stocky, big, and rather short, almost.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I guess by then, by doing the same, you know, work in the ring, they naturally turned him babyface in America, in
yeah.
hometown. Because Stone Cold Steve Austin always worked like a heel. People turned him babyface.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Much like a lot of, you know, old heels later year, you still do the same stuff.
Yep.
It's perceived babyface.
Yeah.
So, but in Japan, you had to be Crusher. You had to be the Bruiser.
Yeah.
And, I watched it. You know, this like looked the same, and they wasn't billed as cousins in Japan, but it was the Bruiser and the Crusher.
Yeah.
And very similar looking two guys, you know, and they worked in the same style and they just punch.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
But they were there for 1 week. Crusher, the Red Bastine, the, you know, Dennis Stump, Buddy Austin, they're all veterans, you know, like it was interesting that they're going, had a match against people like Strong Kobayashi and Great Kusatsu. And I don't think they lost any matches. Just every match was DQ finish.
Mm. Yeah.
You can get away with it in the 70s, you know,
yeah.
I guess. Yeah. But yeah. So they came, okay. I have a question. No, as of November of 1972, were they even WWE World Tag Team Champions? Were they?
Bruiser or Crusher? Yeah.
Were they?
No,
okay.
I believe that. Well, depending on the timing, yeah. it would have been them, the Blackjacks, the Valiants, those guys trading it
yeah,
around quite
yeah,
a bit.
Yeah, but they were billed as WWE mm-hmm. World Tag Team Champions, but they didn't bring in belts. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
yeah, as a kid, you know, watching TV, it's like, what's the championship belt? You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And, but they came in and did what they do and left. But 1 week stay, they taped like four TV shows to make it last. Yeah.
Well, the one thing that about Bruiser, he always had kind of, for lack of a better word, kind of a lazy style, like you mentioned, right? He didn't have to do a lot at home, right, to get a reaction.
He wasn't lazy, very smart. The more it means.
Lazy is not the right word, right? But it's a minimal style.
Today's wrestlers, you know, you do 35 moves in one match.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Doesn't mean thing anymore. And do the spectacular move, let the guy kick out at the count of two, you just wasted.
Yeah. Well, and Bruiser not known, you know, to take many bumps, especially later. But so I guess my question would be, I mean, did that style, is that what they wrestled in Japan as well? Was it still that minimalistic?
Exactly. Yeah, well,
not taking a lot of bumps?
No wrestling moves.
Okay.
Just a little stump, punch. Yeah, not even elbow, punch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they are, you know.
Uppercut.
Yeah, they're brawlers, right? That's They were known
bottle,
as brawlers. Yeah.
Bucket. Yeah. Or throw guys after you know, ring and, you know, carry guys all over the building.
Yeah.
So people can touch.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, you hear about a lot of guys, right, when they come to Japan, they step up their game, right? You see a different, like a Hulk Hogan. You see a different
side. That's like in ring product, you mean?
Yeah.
Like Stan Hansen on?
Yeah.
Usability?
Yeah.
But that also requires educated eyes, right? Mm-hmm. 70s, 60s audience, 70s audience, 80s audience with VCR. You know
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. True.
The more information, reading-oriented fans. But
true.
60s into early 70s, I think they were able to get by.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Get
yeah.
away with what they just do.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned
network channel.
Sure. And you mentioned, right, taking their opponents out in the crowd, doing some of those things, which, right, was a that became, you know, a little more commonplace. The guys that, you know, the Hansons, the Brodies, known for some of that with that, and the crowd loved that stuff, right? Being able to be a part.
Yeah,
How many guys were doing that prior to Bruiser and Crusher? And were there always someone kind of doing that style? Or did they, were they kind
real
of?
Real good question. They were very exception, you know, like they came in as big, huge name, superstar heel.
Yeah. Okay.
The type of wrestler you read in magazines, you know?
Yeah.
Like making Japan tour, like a big rock and roll star type, you know?
Yeah. Well, that was my approach. It was like, right, these guys, like the Hansons, the Brodies, were huge, right? They were the Funks.
Oh, huge. Huge.
Huge.
But you have to remember, see, in the 60s and 70s, you know, a lot of the American stars came in for once or twice.
Yeah.
You know, right. Like once in lifetime kind of tour, you know, you mm-hmm. feel. But with maybe after the Dorian Terry, you know, the Funks, Stan Hansen, the Bruiser Brody, they were coming back and forth maybe 6-7 tours a year.
Correct, right. Yeah, like and you said, Bruiser, I mean, just Stan 7 tours Bruiser total. Brody,
yeah, just about Japan was the only place they worked at, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, Bruiser.
Peak of their career.
Yeah, and like you said, Bruiser, I mean, he's only going every 3, 4, 5 years or so and doing
yeah, and one
at
week
most
at
a week. Yeah.
Yeah, 1 week at a time. So it's yeah. like you are watching as a treat. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is a guy you read about in magazine. He was in a part of the Tiger Mask comic book and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Giant Baba comic book. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And also, that was a wrestler who ripped referee Okishkina's shirt off.
And yeah.
Famous for it. Yeah. Like, the Bruiser and Crusher grabbed the referee's, you know, jersey,
yeah.
ripping referee's, you know, shirt off. So that yeah. was part of this, you know, like real famous routine.
Yeah, and but like you mentioned, right, Bruiser and Crusher. I mean, we'll just say on Bruiser particularly, right? I mean, people liked him, right? They there was an appeal to him, but yet he was a little older. I could see, had you gotten him, like you mentioned earlier, more in his prime years, I could see some of that level of a Brody Hansen later, if you had got to see maybe some prime Bruiser, that maybe, you know, I mean, again, Bruiser, right? He was known in Japan. People loved him in Japan. He was that style of wrestler. And had you, like you mentioned earlier, the timing been different, if you had got him more in his prime years, a little later, when there's, you know, it would
more
have been
vicious, more physical, of course.
Yeah. Now, I don't know whether he would want to travel anymore. He wasn't a traveler,
yeah,
but.
You know, Japan seemed more like a far away then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, now yeah. people travel a lot more. You know, none of the plane stops in Hawaii.
Yeah.
You have direct flight from New York to from Dallas to from even Tampa, Florida. They fly direct flight, you know.
Yeah.
And people travel a lot far now, you know, than they did then. And Dick
yeah.
DeBruzza was also a promoter.
Correct.
Much like the Sheik, you know.
Yeah.
The Sheik only came in 1 week at a time, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was my next point too, right? That I would venture guess that probably kept Bruiser, right, from doing potentially more tours. Is one of the reasons is, you know, he was making money at home as a promoter, not just a wrestler. He was making promoter money. And a lot of guys went to Japan because there was
not
more
just
money.
Money. But that's a company he owned and had to run.
Sure. And he was the guy, right? He needed to be there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
be on the shows.
Much
so,
like the Sheik or the Fritz von Erich in Dallas, he only came so many tours, but
yeah.
they're always 1 week at a time.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I think there's a lot of factors there that kept, that's why you only got Bruiser so long, which I don't know. I don't know if Bruiser, more exposure to Bruiser would have been a good, I don't know. You know, keeping
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's novelty would be good word, you know, because
yeah.
he had no intention to be regular,
yeah.
like, you know, 5 tours a year and anything like that. But every few years, you know, Dick DeBruzza will be making one appearance 1 week, you know. And then Baba would be, you know, Giant Baba would treat him like a very special guest appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, that after this IWA 1972 tour, it was his 1975 first tour with Baba's Old Japan.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that's that connection to Baba, right? Is
1972 was an interesting year. 1972, March, Anthony Inoki starts New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Summer of 1972, same year, Giant Baba walk off, you know, from JWA and form his Old Japan Pro Wrestling with mm-hmm. network television to go with him mm-hmm. and two major league. And soon after, JWA went down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In 1975, it was the Dick the Bruiser's very first tour with Old Japan. You know, then it was like, again, 1 week tour, you know. But this was like the, you know, interesting one that the Dick the Bruiser was on tour. Somebody like Gene Kaniski was on tour. Mr. Wrestling Tim Woods was on tour. Kira Kowalski was on tour. Mark Lewin was on tour, you know, and very young Bob Orton Jr., they call him.
Yeah.
You know, the copy Bob Orton. And rookie Steve Kern. Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Rookie Mike George from Kansas.
Yeah.
And the big tour, and Bruiser came in the final week. You know what I mean? Like somebody special. Yeah.
I have to imagine with those names that a Steve Kern just jumped out of that group. I mean, as being so different at that time.
Rookie Steve Kern, then rookie Bob Orton Jr.
Yeah.
I mean, not even the cowboy Bob Orton. Bob Orton Jr., they call him, with fluffy, you know, like long curly hair.
Yeah.
But the Gene Kaniski, Tim Woods, Mr. Rob, you know, Mr. Wrestling, the Mark Lewin, you know, I mean, just super huge name too from America.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But they were not in their prime either. You know what I'm saying?
No, true. That's what I was going to say. You're talking some elder statesmen there.
That's like every single one of them, friend of Baba's.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was an interesting tour. The third annual Champion Carnival. Champion Carnival that the Old Japan, today's Old Japan, you know, pro wrestling still carries.
Yeah.
You know, spring tournament. But the Dick the Bruiser was not part of the tournament.
Yeah. So he came solo that time for that tour. No Crusher.
But following year, you know, again with Old Japan, he brought the Crusher, you know, with him. Yeah. One week tour again.
Yeah. So tell us about that tour. What that was in what now 76, you're saying?
He came back January of 76 then. Yeah.
Okay.
With the Crusher.
Okay.
So that was their final tour together, Bruiser and Crusher, mm-hmm. January of 1976. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, do you have an idea? Well, what kind of guy, who were they working? What types of teams would they be working at that time? Where
Giant
were
Baba
they?
And younger Jumbo Tsuruta.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And Dick Beyer in Japanese side, the Destroyer.
Destroyer,
living
yeah.
in Japan and, mm-hmm. and working Japanese side. Mm-hmm. It was a big deal that the, you know, Dick Beyer, the Destroyer, was such a big star, right?
Yeah.
But when Giant Baba started Old Japan, he came in and had a program, you know, if I lose this single match with Baba, I will come to Japan and be on Old Japan side. And the match took place and Baba beat Dick Beyer. And he moved whole family over to Japan. And as Destroyer, and lived in Japan like 7 years.
Yeah.
And because Giant Baba's Old Japan didn't have that the big of a Japanese crew, you know. Giant Baba, the Koma, Okuma, the Rookie Jumbo Tsuruta, and just a few other, you know. And Dick Beyer, the Destroyer, huge name, was a big addition, you know, to this Old Japan roster. So he was always side by side with Giant Baba and Destroyer. And then all these big superstar from 70s coming in from America, you know, this time was like, you know, like, I just talked about Gene Kaniski, the Kirill Kowalski, the Mark Lewin, the Mr. Wrestling, the Tyson Tyler, you know, Tarzan Tyler or somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Always working. And yeah, I pretty much enjoyed it because these are the wrestlers you read about in wrestling magazine. Whereas Anthony Inoki's in New Japan, always heard, you know, had a, you know, international American stars so-called stud that you've never heard of.
Well, that was kind of All Japan's approach for many years, right? They were known for bringing in some of these, the Dr. Deaths, the Hansons, the Brodies, the Road Warriors, a lot of these guys coming over to, All Japan and stuff. And I mean, they did different.
Let's say more like Hardy Race Mill Massacres.
Okay, yeah.
Because Terry Gordy, Steve Williams, these are more like signed the contract with All Japan type guys.
Yeah, they right.
Because Jan Baba Kapatai was then Jim Crockett promotion into WCW. Like, wow, the American companies, changed the structure,
Yeah.
And not sending any guys over. Because until then, All Japan, Jan Baba, just phone call with Amarillo, Texas, Dory and Terry Funk, All Japan's agent, So that was smooth, communication. And now that with 1984 WWF, Vince McMahon national expansion and Jim Crockett NWA promotion became national company itself and start sending, stopped sending American talent to Japan, and AWA was going down, the structure changed, right?
Yeah.
So Giant Baba had to create their own American crew. But that's another subject for another day.
Yeah.
Dick the Bruiser was in this Giant Baba, like 1970s Giant Baba mode,
Yeah.
The perfect guest superstar from America.
Yeah. And you mentioned right there. Yeah, you talked about him. He came over Crusher in 76. So did he do, how many more tours did he do with after that?
That was his sixth tour. And
so one more.
1976 January tour was Crusher, 1 week tour when he was 46. Was final tour was All Japan. I thought it was it. But he did one more tour, 1980s, Dying IWE.
Okay, he did.
Yeah, again, one week. Because at the time, they were bringing in Spike Huber.
Okay.
Bruce's
son-in-law, yeah.
Then son-in-law.
Stan's son-in-law, and, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, then son-in-law. That IWE was looking for the territory that can, provide American talent, And they had planned for Spike Huber to be star in Japan.
Yeah.
Which didn't quite happen, But this time, people like, young Jake Roberts, like a rookie Jake Roberts, or that the Kiss makeup Mike Boyetti.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And the guys you've never heard of, like a Tom Stanton, maybe. Uh-huh. Eddie Sullivan from like Alabama.
Yep.
And Dick the Bruiser came in for 1 week to be the top of the tour, He was 50, right? But that was his last tour. He worked and walking like Dick the Bruiser, and move like Dick the Bruiser, and all these Japanese stars sold everything he did, of course.
Yeah.
So if you work for All Japan, you can work like a veteran, but you almost have to work with time, because everybody knows this is 1976.
Yeah.
Not a 1957, 59 anymore. And aged Dick the Bruiser with same, navy trunks with D on it, and saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And red boots, and obviously face aged.
Yeah, correct. But
still looks like Dick the Bruiser.
Yeah.
So that was like a very, it's kind of like you have like original Popeye or somebody from the cartoon.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
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 Japanese fans love this. Mill Maskers is still, touring Japan every now and then. Mill Maskers, 80-year-old Maskers. Harley Race was touring Japan until he couldn't anymore. So Japanese fans always love like super, super veterans,
Yeah.
So, the 1980 version of Dick the Bruiser was that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's nostalgia built into that, right? This. And there's also, right, this. There's this this American big name, right? That it was a big deal when they came
to headline the tour.
Yeah, to headline. So no matter, you're happy whatever you're getting, whether it's not prime, you're still, it's like, oh well, this is still Dick the Bruiser, right? I'm still getting to see Dick the Bruiser.
Yeah. So he did have final tour in 1980. Yeah, that was the last time. Yeah,
that's crazy. And
because people like Mad Dog Vachon, you know, occasionally came back to Japan and did what he did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I do know Bruiser, you know, he kept promoting into the 80s, but he did slow down a little with his stuff a little. And you know, he was kind of a homebody, right? He liked to stay
course,
near Indianapolis
course.
And
you
didn't
know,
travel
but
around.
Because the two side of this, you know, like side A and side B story, because of it, Indianapolis, WWE never developed the new superstar.
True.
You know what I'm saying?
That's yeah. True. Yeah, it is definitely true. I mean, every guy that come through that had the potential never, like, you know, like a Spike Huber, right? Like a Steve Regal that who later went on to AWA
or
and stuff.
Even
and,
younger Bruiser Brody.
But yeah. Longer Bruiser Brody, right? He came in and yeah, had a run with Bruiser, but yeah, they have, you know, they had lots of guys and
over Bruiser name, yeah.
But it was all Bruiser in the end. And
also like people like Jimmy and Johnny Valiant mm-hmm. came in, became a star and went elsewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of reasoning behind that kind of stuff because Bruiser,
okay.
No matter how much you grew, how much he wanted to still pay you like you were a rookie sometimes.
Yeah.
So
that's
you know.
So similar, so it was geographically close, you know, so similar to big time wrestling, the Sheik, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot
well,
of people came in and developed, kind of left, you know, and Sheik was, and also they ran each other's territory too.
They did.
She ran Indiana and Ohio and all that.
It
and
did.
Bruiser came into Michigan and ran their shows. Yeah.
It did. It's yeah. Bruiser and Sheik were two of a kind. They were because yeah, they would do that. They would, you know, they worked together so much.
Worked together so much to work
yeah,
against each other.
And
then so
working they would work against each other. And Bruiser came into Detroit and tried to take Detroit and then when that didn't work, well, they just went back working together again. Just like
yeah, but that was a serious, serious deal then.
It was. But it was,
you know?
But it was funny because it's like they would run the same nights, two shows in Detroit. And they were, I mean, each of them were drawing 10,000 people. I mean, Detroit was hot at that time. But then when it was all said and done and Bruiser pulled up, it's like it burned out. What are you going to do after that? Because, Sheik was bringing in everybody to try to fight Bruiser, right? He was having everybody sent in. Well, you can't hot shot for that long. What's going to, then people don't go back to seeing your normal guys after that. When
and
you're seeing,
also, it's hard to support two companies in one town at the time. And
absolutely.
Wrestling fans, same wallet, you know, out of the, you know, I mean, it's like, do I have to go watch two shows all
yeah.
the time, you know? And
yeah.
When wrestling was basically like almost like a blue, you know, blue collar entertainment.
It was
on Thursday night, you know.
It was, yeah.
And it was well before cable TV, let alone pay per view.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
So we're talking about technology shifting and changes, and it was years before Vince McMahon's national expansion, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we're talking about this almost nostalgia. Part of me wishes that there was more local, you know, oriented, regional. I don't say local, but regional oriented, healthy wrestling company here
yeah.
and there, here and there, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, big city can support that, you know?
Yep.
But now
yep.
it's almost hopeless that, you know, WWE really conquered the world. And they have Japan tour every year. You know, just WWE crew, no Japanese wrestler. Although
yep.
we have Japanese wrestler working in WWE.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Shinsuke Nakamura,
mm-hmm.
the Kai Sane, all that. But they were WWE superstars.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
WWE superstar without any involvement with Japanese company, you know, local country, they come in and run Sumo Palace two nights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so different
high.
Now, though, because it's. You, everybody can see WWE all the time. It's not like there's no regional, right? You can, that's what people recognize. It's not like the attraction, like we talked about earlier, right? Where you watch your local product and then, oh, this other one comes in or this other wrestler comes in for a while. Now you can see that other all the time on TV or
yeah.
on the internet.
But,
or on,
for Japanese market though, you know, WWE superstar coming for Japan tour once a year in every July for 2 days, that's fine. But we still have over 100 wrestling company in Japan alone. Over
really?
100 wrestling company.
Really?
Big to small. Every weekend, there's like a 5-6 shows just in Tokyo, you know? I mean, like, today's my Monday, but this is wrestling somewhere. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
And
that's.
this is December, yeah, like the end of the year to 20, December 28th, 29th, 30, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, January 2nd, 3rd, then Tokyo Dome, New Japan, Wrestle Kingdom, January 4th and 5th. A lot of, a lot of international inbound tourists coming in from, all
Sure.
over the world to attend wrestling shows at the end of the into New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, New Year's
Now,
week.
that's gotta be, I mean, that's gotta be a super busy time for you, right? With Wrestle Kingdom, that's kind of the centerpiece. And
Yeah, but I just attend and not busy like writing. I don't write weekly pro wrestling articles anymore like I
Okay.
did for 35 years or so. Like week in, week out, year after year, writing wrestling stories. But that's for little younger guys now,
Yeah. So tell me, how's Dick the Bruiser remembered in Japan now? Do people still remember Dick the Bruiser? Do
What?
they?
Bruiser, the Crusher, the Vern Gagne, these stars, the Sheik, these are the stars for people who remember things. You have to be over at least 50, to even remember the Sheik, the Bruiser, the even Le Mill Masker, the Harley Race, even the Funks. You know what I'm saying? It's like that in the States too. But let's make it like very easy that the today's wrestling fan don't think there was any wrestling before Hulk Hogan. Yeah, Hulk Hogan is the ancient figure in professional wrestling, so-called, and none of these, superstar from 70s and 60s, or let alone 50s and 40s, go just judge anybody. That something that's a, well, I'm not interested. Like, okay, you know what I'm saying? For today's fan, the oldest one they go back and watch is probably Hulk Hogan era, beginning of WrestleMania. That's still 40 years, For Japanese lives, like internet streaming wrestling, moving image, the oldest match they want to watch is Keiji Muto against Nobuhiko Takada, New Japan against UWFI, Tokyo Dome in 1995. That's the oldest wrestling match, still 30 years ago, right? But that's the old wrestling match. And then when you go into New Japan World, much like WWE Network, the streaming service thing, there are tons of Antonio Inoki matches in there that young people don't watch it. Antonio Inoki against Bob Backlund, Antonio Inoki against Hogan, Inoki against Andre, anybody, that they
Everybody,
just don't go in there and watch. Let alone Ricky Dozan. They don't even, oh, I know the name. I've heard. You've heard about Ricky Dozan. It's like a father of pro wrestling in Japan.
Absolutely. Yeah, there would be nothing. I mean,
Yeah, but they are not interested,
I mean,
It's
yeah,
the reality of it.
that's very similar. Yeah, it's a very similar mindset when, to hear where people say, "Oh yeah, I love wrestling. I love the old
Yeah, but
wrestling." It's like,
you gotta learn about and study if you're a serious wrestling fan. You
you
got to
do.
study, say, Bruno Sammartino,
You
don't you
do.
think?
Yeah, and it's so easy, so much easier now to do that, to study, than it used to be even, because there's stuff out that's easier to access. When I was young, trying to look up history, because I wanted to know everything, right? I wanted to know all these names.
I want to know everything. I want to learn everything about it, and I want to read about it,
But I had
Yeah.
to go out and I had to try to track down people that had old magazines or something. It was so much harder to try to find
In
this
somebody's
information.
basement.
And go to markets and try to find people selling stuff, and it was hard. And now it's you can look
I
up.
thought that the VHS era was great, that now we can finally do
When that happened, and always I was
But today's audience, they've never touched VH,
no. When I was able to, oh, it's like
VHS.
I can look in a newsletter, and this guy's got wrestling from Portland, and I can send him a tape, and he can send me a tape, and oh,
That's good. That's
I
good.
can finally. And
And
I thought we had.
today's wrestling website, a lot of people are doing their, like a fanzine bulletins, like a wrestling result from so and so. It's just.
I used to love. Yeah, I love the. I used to love the newsletter type stuff where you could, where you subscribe and people were cutting the newspaper clippings from their
Oh, no.
area and send them.
And they Xerox
Yeah, stuff that you couldn't see otherwise. But I loved it because that was like surfing the internet back then. That's how you. And I thought we'd peaked. I thought, oh, this is
But
great. So much
internet's
information.
great, but today's wrestling website is so inaccurate.
It is. That's especially in so many people that lean on the WWE who don't
Yeah, like
they
just yesterday, they were talking about the beginning of Razor Ramon Scott Hall, right? They're putting a photo of Danny Spivey on it. Like today, I just saw this morning, it's like, do you want to know more about Ricky Dozan who died at the age of 38? Wrong, right?
Well,
And,
I mean, they had the WWE had the big Saturday Night's main event last night, wherein Jesse the Body Ventura
Jesse
was on there,
Ventura, of course.
and he comes out there and says, "Oh, it's the first time I've been in the WWE for 40 years." And I was like, "I don't think that
Is
math
it?
works out, Jesse. I don't think that's correct, but
But
okay."
approximately 40 years, I guess.
True, yeah, but
He probably meant like a very beginning of WrestleMania era.
I don't, I mean, I don't blame you, but WWE has always been known for miswriting the history, right? Because they were the
Rewriting.
rewriting, right? Because
Rewriting.
they were the victors, so they got to paint the picture how they wanted to paint the picture, and sometimes it's not the.
Well, I think I have a little bit more faith in Triple H.
Me too, me
Now
too. It is
that
much better, I think, in recent times than it was there
but
for
he
a
has
long
no
time.
reason to, because he's a student of sport, and now he's more liberal, about it.
Well, they're much better, and they have a much better product that they acknowledge and celebrate that history. To me, I mean, there's no, it's not going to hurt them to mention some of these guys. It doesn't.
Even stronger.
So it's, I don't watch a lot, but yeah, I love when I see something, they'll name drop somebody, and it just, it always makes me feel good when they do that. But
Historical figure?
I think any
And
little
also,
kernel.
I think that the US heavyweight title is also another example of that such gesture, right? I mean, Vince McMahon era Intercontinental title, single other than world title, it's like it's kind of just a thing, don't let it have any meaning of it. But now it has meaning of it a little bit more though.
But I do agree. I have a little more faith in Triple H and the modern regime than obviously the past. I think
And
I
also it's a more of a corporate structure for real,
yeah, true.
So
Absolutely. I mean, I mean, for all intents and purposes, they've won, right? They've in America, they've won.
they
So they
won.
can
Yeah, they won.
there's no reason to rewrite anything anymore. They own it all. I mean, most of these libraries.
Oh, from like a just all the th they bought, Calgary footage, the AEW footage, the even Dallas footage, did how about Indianapolis WWE videotapes? They exist even?
They do some of them. I have some of the later stuff. I own some of the later stuff from Dr. Jerry Graham Jr. when he was running it there at the very tail end. I have a lot of those tapes. The tapes that were left that they had, which Bruiser's widow had, and she passed away a few years ago, are now, I believe, they're owned by Herb Simmons out of St. Louis. I think he has what was left of those, and
What era?
I don't think they
Like
go much. I think they only
60s?
go back into the 70s. Some of them in the 70s, but I would venture to guess primarily late 70s into the early 80s. I guess it'd be most of. I don't think they were well stored because I think they were just in Bruiser's garage, so I don't know the quality.
Was that like a 3/4 inch tape? Yeah,
I
not
mean.
even better cam.
No. What I have are mostly the U-Matic cassettes, which are the early beta type tapes. So they're a little easier. They're a little better preserved. And they were very well kept. So, but again, what I have is from mid 80s on. So just those last few years that they were kind of running here and there, and mostly, like I said, they were over into Ohio by then and doing different stuff. So, but Herb, and I know he's got, he's trying to get them digitized and do what he can. I don't know where that stands. It's a hard
And
process, right? If
also,
you don't know somebody.
it's not owned by somebody who really know the history of it.
So, but it's a
It Indianapolis WWE always had just a world title and the world tag team title. Is that it? That's two titles.
That's it. Always those two.
Did they acknowledge that they came from LA?
Early on, yes. Later, they dropped that altogether. But yeah, in the first few years, they did.
Bruiser won the world title in California, you know,
And brought it.
the
Yep,
brought the
that's.
title home to Indianapolis, and
Yep, that's how they. Yeah, that's how they sold it in the beginning, that he
and
finally went
always had
up.
TV.
Yeah, always had TV because
Local.
local. Yeah, they were on channel a local channel WR WTTV, and then later on WRTV. But up till all the way from 64 up to 85, 86, 86, they were always on local
But
Indianapolis TV.
1964, they don't exist.
I have
Okay.
video from a show from 1967, I think one from 1968, and that's the earliest I've ever seen. And these are two complete TV shows. There are a
That's a
few
treasure.
clips,
That's a
yeah, but
treasure.
nothing from 64 wise, but that's the earliest I've ever seen. So, and but it's and early on they did studio wrestling early on. Later, when they were selling out some of the larger expo halls and different things around the area, they just taped those shows and spliced together for their TV. And they didn't do studio wrestling anymore. And then they would just do the interviews at ringside and stuff like that, like a lot of guys. So,
Because
when they
after
were.
people watching WWF, TV as a major league of wrestling, it's like our local TV doing that in studio. Oh my gosh, right?
Yeah.
So,
Well, that's why in the 70s, when WWA was doing these bigger showing these bigger shows on TV, they looked huge. Because they were showing these arenas and they were drawing 10,000 people or sometimes to these shows.
Bruiser on top
Bruiser on top. Yeah. I mean, Bruiser
against
was,
people like Von Raschke or somebody.
Von Raschke, all those kind of, the Blackjacks,
Blackjacks, yeah.
all those kind of guys. But Bruiser, he always did that, drop the title to the local, the newest heel in the area, chase
Yeah.
him for a while, win it back, and then move on to the next bad guy, right? The
Jerry
next.
Lawler. Jerry
Yep.
Lawler style. I mean, like a
Absolutely.
Jackie Fargo style or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's what the local guys, territory would do,
Yep. I mean, everybody that came through that was a heel had a run, right? I mean, Bruiser Brody had a run, Harley Race had a run, Mitsuo Arakawa had a run.
Okay.
Arakawa, yeah, I mean, he was a regular. And but all these guys, when they would come
Like I
in.
said, Mitsu Arakawa, the Professor Tanaka, the Mr. Fuji, all these guys, they believed they are Japanese. None of them were actually Japanese,
No, nope, absolutely
Japanese
not.
American, that's fine. Japanese
Yeah.
American wrestler, that's fine. But when people like Takachiho came, he later became Great Kabuki. He was genuine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mitzi was a fixture in Indianapolis
Did
for a long time.
Sakaguchi ever work in Indianapolis?
Not that I know of.
Fujika? Mr. Ito?
Don't think so.
Oh, not too many. Oh, Kim Doc Toguchi?
Tim Duck, yeah, he teamed with Mitzi for a while in
Ah,
Indianapolis. Yeah.
okay.
Dr. Moto, I don't know.
Dr. Moto's Akira Tō Kamata.
Yeah, he teamed with Mitsu for a while in
Okay.
Indianapolis.
But he, Hawaii.
Yeah, again, yeah.
Polynesian with
Yep.
Japanese name on them,
Yep. Yep. But yeah, Mitsu was there a long time. Owned a bar in Indianapolis and was just a fixture for a long time. But
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
he Miss Arakawa, Kenji Shibuya, they were stars, with the real stereotype Japanese heel,
Yeah, that's why there's so many guys that I every year, when they do like the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, I always go out there and try to raise.
I vote for older guys too. Yes,
Yeah, and
every year I do.
I always try to plug, that hey, people need Cowboy Bob Ellis, because I like people don't understand Cowboy Bob Ellis's impact. They don't. No one knows how important he was.
Exactly.
And
Well,
I.
Cowboy Bob Ellis, of course, but like I told you, the wrestling didn't exist before Hulk
I
Hogan
know.
for today's wrestling fans.
Yeah, and it drives me mad that it's like he can't. No disrespect to anybody, but guys like the Young Bucks or someone gets in, but there's no Cowboy Bob Ellis in the Hall of Fame. I mean, come on. I mean, I.
Yeah, for Japanese stars, like Shingo Takagi and Shima, get
Yeah.
in, and Yoshiaki Fujiwara is not in it,
Yep.
or people like Dick Murdoch is in it,
I know it. That's what I think. I always wish some
different
of these.
statistics. Yeah.
At some point, a guy like Dave Meltzer, I feel like you just need at some point say, okay, we're going to put these guys in because they're deserving, and the modern audience, the modern voter, is not familiar with them. enough to
Never
know.
seen it and never
And
studied it.
yeah, and but I, every year when the voting time comes up, I'm like, everybody, remember Cowboy Bob? I mean, and he doesn't
I
get
do
it.
with Japanese wrestlers too. Yeah,
yeah,
all the stars and American stars that worked Japan. You know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Wilbur Snyder was another Indianapolis superstar.
Mm-hmm.
Wilbur Snyder was really big in Japan.
Yeah,
and I, you know, when I was a kid, you know, single match, Wilbur Snyder against Baba, Wilbur Snyder against Inoki, and he handled young Inoki like a kid.
Mm.
You know, I was like, you know, Wilbur Snyder.
Yeah. I mean, Snyder was Bruiser's, you know, business partner there in Indianapolis. And, you know, why they...
He worked like, you know, Japanese wrestling fan always liked people like Pat O'Connor, Wilbur Snyder, Billy Robinson, you know, who can really wrestle.
Yeah, I mean, well, they would call Bruiser the world's most dangerous wrestler, right? And Snyder was the world's most scientific wrestler.
Scientific
so.
wrestler.
Yeah.
Scientific wrestler is, you know, yesterday's term, too.
It
Nobody
is.
says
no,
Nobody
no
says scientific wrestler anymore.
No, they don't. There's not labels like that anymore, right? When I mean, I, you know, you'd have a, what kind of wrestler is he? Oh, he's scientific. He's a brawler. He's an aerial guy. He's a... And I remember a guy would throw a drop kick, and he'd be an aerial wrestler. And then, and now it's like,
flying head scissors, the greatest move, right?
Everybody does everything.
No, I know that we cannot go back there, you know. We cannot.
Oh, true,
but,
true.
You know, but let's not, I mean, I wish everybody was different. Every single wrestler worked differently, you know, not like your carbon copy, you know, that the bell-to-bell choreograph, you know.
Yeah, wrestler. People need their own style, right? They need a unique look, a little bit, something unique. About their look, you know. I mean, everybody looks the same.
WWE's fine because every single superstar have different finish.
Yes,
different finish. That's fine. But other than that, very similar.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard to. I don't know.
Terry Funk, late, I should say, late great Terry Funk. You know, was like, didn't ask me anything, but this guy, his word was, since when, somebody make matches for you.
Yeah,
because Terry Funk, you know, till well into late 90s in Japan, let's call it in the ring.
Can you imagine someone trying to tell Terry Funk that, okay, Terry, this is what you need to do in your match, just remember all this? And first of all, he probably couldn't have remembered it.
But it's like, let's not insult him, you know. It's
no.
like, but today's wrestler, we're all brought up that way.
Yeah.
You know, WWE Performance Center, all great athletes with great conditioning, and half of them weren't even wrestling fans growing up.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
And when you don't call it in the ring, you're losing that.
Completely different production now. You know?
Yeah. I mean, when you call in the ring, you're able to use the crowd, right? Feed off the crowd and how they react. I mean, that's how you know what works, what doesn't work. And
that would not work when you have 2 hours time to, you know,
it
like
is.
Back, you know, like a framed WWE Monday Night Raw programming.
Yeah, everything's flipped now, right? Because used to, you had the TV product, which was just to try to drive people to the shows. Now it's, they have the shows, but everything's about the TV product. So it's backwards now. So it, yeah, you're right. It's
Yeah, because the house show is just something that you do every night.
Yeah.
Not every night. Just every weekend, same lineup, same card, probably exact same matches.
Yeah, that's not how they make their money anymore. Yeah, that's so
still
like
make,
they used to. Well, yeah, but
house shows make a lot more money than any independent.
Sure, but used to that the house shows were that's how a bit they stayed in business.
Yeah.
And now it's the TV deals and everything. You know, that's the sponsorships.
TV rights are so high, you know, that the $50 million a year annual TV rights and all that. Now that WWE is always top of the business, now they're moving from traditional television to Netflix version of Monday Night Raw. That time will tell, you know, that's how. Because today's kids, I teach college courses, you know, none of them have TV at their apartment. None.
Yeah. It's,
you know,
everything's
streaming.
Like
carrying this is like you have a TV too, you know?
Got everything,
And
so,
TV is something your parents used to watch.
Yeah. So let's plug you.
Yes.
Do you still do the Pacific Rim podcast with Jim Valley? Is
yeah,
that correct?
Yeah, with Jim Valley. And also I have another one called Write That Down with Justin Nipper.
Okay. And there was a
and occasionally you have Japanese podcasts here and there, here and there.
Yeah. So both of those cover Japanese wrestling, is that correct? Are they
just like we did today, that they talk about, you know, American superstars in Japan.
Yeah.
You know, also I can talk about Frank Gotch. I can talk about, you know, Ed Strangler Lewis.
Yeah.
You know, and the Ricky Dozen, of course, all the way to NWA, AWA. It's like there was more connection in Japan. You know, Vince McMahon Sr. and Antonio Inoki had a partnership, and Giant Baba's NWA membership. Antonio Inoki tried to get a membership in NWA, and it was all monopoly, but then it was antitrust, everything against free enterprise. NWA told Inoki, one geographic area, one company, right?
Yeah.
To be member of NWA, but that's everything against free enterprise. But,
true.
Yeah, so technically, both Baba's Old Japan and Inoki's, you know, New Japan were technically NWA members at the end. But Harley Race never went to, you know, Inoki's, you know, New Japan.
Yeah.
Jack Briscoe. But after Jack Briscoe were no longer NWA champion, they, you know, Florida office in Inoki's business, that the Jack Briscoe, the Dusty Rose, all went to Inoki's New Japan Pro Wrestling. What happens? Inoki beat Jack Briscoe clean. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, when you grow up, you know, and you look back, that's what it was about, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You kind of understand differently now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like you said, you're doing the podcast, right? You're no longer, you know.
I'm not weekly pro wrestling.
Yeah, you don't, you're not really writing, doing what you're teaching.
I write a book every year.
You do? Okay. Well, tell us about that. Tell us about your books.
Oh, I published over 30 books. And my latest book on Ricky Dozan coming out this week.
There you go. Okay. And so is that just in Japanese?
Of course.
Of course. Well, what about
us? I'm a writer in Japan. It's not about American market.
That's true. That is true. But what about us in America that want to write?
I've been a journalist over 43 years, professionally, full time, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't do this for American audience, who this is a very narrow, you know, like margin. Yeah. This coming out next week. I mean, this week. Now.
Yeah. So if somebody's interested, how can they get that? That's the easiest way.
Amazon.
Okay.
And also, like the second thing, maybe first thing, every single person, you're not the only one. Is that in English too?
Yeah.
It's not that easy.
Yeah.
You know? I'm a very good Japanese writer, you know.
And there's not a lot of direct translation between some, right? I mean, it's not like a one-to-one translation on certain things, correct?
Not too many, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
Shakespeare books, yes. Yeah. Mark Twain books, yes. Yeah.
But it wouldn't be easy for someone else to sit down with your book to do a translation over to English without losing some of the context.
Yeah, because Google translation won't translate my nuance.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
But somebody can try it, because if you buy this book on Kindle format, Google translation will try that.
Ah, okay.
You know, so probably get like a 70% right. But that 30% nuance is just as important, huh?
That's right.
So, I can talk about this book all night long. I'm hoping. See, this is book on Ricky Dozan. Ricky Dozan, look, there have been over at least 100 books on Ricky Dozan by now, you know. And I want my book to be most accurate and insightful and truthful and feel good, you know, because at the end, Ricky Dozan book always had to deal with the fact that he was stabbed by Yakuza gangster, right?
Yeah.
But for me, that's what happened that night, and it's not important. You know, actually, that's how he died, but that's not very important. His legacy in his meaning in historically is much, much, much bigger. And also, a lot of people don't talk about 10 years in sumo wrestling, and 10 years in wrestling.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely one of the most important figures in wrestling history of all time. I mean,
and father of professional wrestling.
And yeah, and that's a literal title, right? The father. I mean, you can't.
Father of, yeah.
I mean, it's not like how people say.
So he was a product of wartime. A lot of people say he hid the fact that he was from Korea, you know, inaccurate.
Yeah.
Inaccurate. He's from North Korea. Scary, right? Inaccurate.
Yeah.
Between 1909 to 1940, for 35 period, there was no North Korea. There was no South Korea. The entire, you know, Korea Peninsula was Japanese colony.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And when in 1940, when Ricky Dawson, sometimes say, some people say he was 15, he was 16, sometimes he was 18. When he came to Japan to be a sumo wrestler in 1940, he didn't bring his passport. The kid who grew up in colony, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like a definition of like invasion type of thing. Well, Japanese, Imperial Japan at the time, okay?
Yeah.
They invaded entire Korea Peninsula and they built all the infrastructure, like a railroad and schools and hospital. They provided, you know, school and they provided, you know, trains and railway and hospital. But that's exactly what invasions do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They took the language away from them. Ricky Dawson and his family, young Ricky Dawson, spoke Korean at home, but he was educated in Japanese school. So they spoke, but it's a product of wartime. He had Korean name, he had Japanese name. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the real history need to be understood.
Yeah. It's marvelous to me how not only wrestling, but so many things, how all these years later, you know, the research, the learning never stops, right? There's always more to uncover, more to discover. If people just keep at it and keep working.
It's
fascinating. I mean, you would think there's so many things that are so old. Oh, we know everything about that, but it's not.
I believe that's my responsibility to finish something like this and at least hand it to next generation.
Yeah.
I cannot be responsible 50 years from, you know, for people 50 years from that, but at least people that are 20, 30 years younger than we are, that's my responsibility to have it truthful, accurate.
There you go.
Wrestling story.
There you go. Well, people can find that on Amazon. Fumi, do you have a way that people can follow you on social media if they want to see what you're working on, what you're up to?
Fumi Saito on Facebook or X Twitter, Fumihikodayo, FumiHikodayo, Fumihikodayo on Twitter. And I also have the Blue Sky.
The new sound just made, and also
Fumi Saito 2001 on Instagram.
There you go. I'll throw all those links in the show notes so people don't have to write that down. They can just go and click and follow you.
Claro, Pacific Rim, original Pacific Rim, archived in Podbean for free. About 50 episodes of Pacific Rim before Jim and I joined Wrestling Observer, you know, umbrella. Yeah.
Correct.
But we have at least 50 episodes archived in Podbeam.
Yeah.
Podbeam.
All right.
And also, write that down with Justin Nipper. We have 30, 40 free episodes on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm not that organized, you know?
Yeah. There's lots of Fumi out there that people can consume and follow. Yeah. So, and everybody go and get Fumi's book. It's coming out next week.
If anybody coming to Japan at the end of the year, I have English only talk show at the Todokan on December 28th.
There you go. Yeah, because a lot. Yeah,
lots only of, on Japanese, no Japanese, just English.
There you go. Yeah, because I mean, lots of American fans come over. Obviously, like we said, for Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah. So
come and join. Yeah, if you're coming, if you're traveling over for Wrestle Kingdom, then look up with Fumi and check it out. English only talk show, huh?
Interesting, huh?
Yeah, that's interesting.
First of its kind.
There you go. Well, Fumi, thank you for joining me.
It's been a lot of fun.
And talking to Dick the Bruiser, and I think you and I will have to revisit later and talk about something else. There's lots more stuff
sure,
that you and I could talk about. But I appreciate you educating us on Dick the Bruiser in Japan, because that's dear to my heart. So I enjoyed it.
We shared it. It need to be shared a lot more, you know?
It does. It does. Yeah. So Fumi, we will stay in touch and I will talk to you again soon. Hopefully have you on in the future.
Good. So long from Tokyo.
Hey, you bums. We have to take a quick break.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to The Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The Outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the Outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
We're back on Wrestling Nostalgia.
All right, and thank you to Fumi for coming on and talking to me about Dick the Bruiser's appearances in Japan. I will have Fumi on again in the future, and we will dive into some other Japanese wrestling history topic. So stay tuned for that down the road. Guys, everybody follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much every platform. All you have to do is look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or just The Dave Dynasty. You'll find me. I'm not hard to find. I'm the guy with long hair and a Bruiser t-shirt. How many more guys like that can there be out there? So, and while you're out there perusing the interwebs world, go check out all the other WrestleCopia networks of podcasts. You can look them up by their show name, or you can go to WrestleCopia.com. to find them all. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Go to classicwrestling.net or download the app on all of your smart devices. Guys, next episode, big episode. This is an interview that I've been trying to get together for months. Me and this person had it in agreement. We've talked. Everything was good. And it just seemed like one thing after another would come up. And you'll understand a lot of it and a lot of the context between some of the things that came up. when we chat. But anyway, the guest on my next episode will be Samu. We talk about his family, the Samoan SWAT team, the head shrinkers, and much, much more. This is a badass interview that you will not want to miss. Samu does not do a whole lot of interviews and podcast appearances, so check that out next episode. Thank you all my listeners, all my supporters, and everything for all your follows, your interactions. You guys certainly make this super fun, and I am appreciative. So until next episode, when, like I said, we will have Samu on as our guest, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.
Wrestling Nostalgia is copyright Dave Dynasty. Bruiser voice done by John Lawson.